hello and good afternoon. This is Maria Vasquez Boy back from Sedona. Many, many, many thanks to my lovely radio husband. Thank you. for filling in for me. And also a heartfelt thank you to Blair Shulman, who filled in for me last week as well. You know, Blair was my co-host when we founded ArtSpeak Radio 5 years ago. Yeah, 5 years. We've been spreading all the news about the arts and writing literary community here in Kansas City. So thank you so much for tuning in today. So we have a full lineup of really terrific guests here in the house, as we always do. Kate Schrader, we're going to be hearing from her first. We've got the Whatsoever Community Center with Eddie Guillen and Alejandro Romero. We also have the National Museum of Toy and Miniature of staff here and an artist. And we have the delightful Meryl Crabtree, who will be talking about her upcoming poetry reading next week. So, you know, stay tuned. Hope you're listening online at kkfi.org, and you can also download our podcast every Friday. I just have a few announcements to make. First of all, Jim the Blind Guy, and we love our Jim the Blind Guy. He called and to remind us that at the Nelson tonight, there's a lecture on the future of museums by the director of the Guggenheim Museum. So that's tonight. NelsonAtkins.org is the website for more information. Also, something that came across my my Instagram account was that KC Love Rocks is just some people who are randomly leaving love rocks in random places across Kansas City and beyond. And I just wanted to share that with you because it's just a really a nice sort of gesture to be out and about in the city and just find these love rocks with really wonderful, you know, messages of love and spreading the peace and all that. So, you know, go paint yourself a love rock and leave it someplace. But anyway, we're going to hear from Kate Schrader. She is a potter and working artist here in Kansas City, Missouri. She received a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Sculpture and Ceramics from the University of Central Missouri and a Master's of Fine Arts, emphasizing sculpture and ceramics, from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. She is an adjunct professor at Kansas City, Kansas Community College and the University of Central Missouri. And it is her belief that there is nothing better in this world than using her hands to make art, drink coffee, and pet her cat. Her website is neatartiststudio.com. We're going to hear right now from Kate. I'm here with Kate Schrader, who's a potter and working artist in Kansas City, Missouri, and she's going to tell us a bit about her art, how you got started, what your inspirations for your work is, and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Very good. So how long have you been an artist, a ceramicist?
As a potter, I've only been working for about 5 years, actually, but I have a Bachelor's of Fine Arts and a Master's of Fine Arts, in which I received, I finished that up in 2012, and those were actually in sculpture. And my work throughout my schooling was so deeply personal and conceptual that when I finished, I really had to take a break. So I took about a half a year off from making work altogether. And then I decided that, you know, I just am naturally an artist. I can't not make.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to make something that I could still have a connection with my viewer, but it didn't have to have so much concept to it, and I didn't have to put so much of myself into it. So my new mission became, I'm going to make a cup because it holds water.
And that's, I love that. Yeah.
That's what it is. And throughout that time, I've had to, you know, just becoming a potter is not an easy task, you know, especially learning to throw on the wheel. So I had to just make thousands and thousands of pots before I finally felt established and felt like I'd found my voice again. And 5 years later, I feel like I'm finally there. And strangely enough, this summer, I've really gone back to my sculptural roots.
Mm-hmm.
And my work has taken on a new concept of being about growth and change, because I feel like I'm in that point in my career again where now I don't want to make a cup just because it holds water.
Sure.
And so what I'm going through is so much growth and change, and so therefore my work is as well, and I'm really adding a lot of sculptural elements onto the vessel because I really did fall in love with an art object that my viewer can hold and use and interact with and nourish themselves with. And
so not only is it beautiful and our you know, just the aesthetics and all that, but it has to have some function.
Absolutely. I want all of my pieces to be used. And I know I do a lot of the pop-up art shows and craft shows around town. And there's a lot of people that say, like, oh, I would just want to put this on a shelf, or I don't want to touch it. And I am a potter and a maker of a breakable thing that I encourage people, please, even in my booth or at the gallery, pick everything up. Hold it all. I think a mug... it's like a good pair of jeans. You have to try it on, you know, and when it fits, it fits.
Now, on your website, you've got two websites.
Yeah.
The one that I looked at them both. Mm-hmm. Kate Schrader, ceramics.com is where you show your ceramic works and all that. And I noticed that there is sort of, with the vessels, which are really, truly beautiful, there's also some sort of a growth. Like barnacles and that attached. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, all of those sculptural forms are, like we were talking about earlier, both based on like growth and change, and they're it's all something natural. So some of them are very much so, like the barnacles or coral-like.
Very unexpected, too.
Yes. And some of them I even take inspiration from things like fungus and lichen and bacteria and... A few of the pieces are quite literal. It looks like barnacles, but, you know, the color might be unexpected, like a bright, bright blue or turquoise. And then some of them, I'll draw a little bit from, like, microbiology and a little bit from, like, a paper wasp's nest, and then a little bit from some sort of a coral, and try and combine all of those textures to kind of create something new. And one thing I do... that is really important in my work is the aspect of attraction and repulsion. And so I love things that when you initially look at them, it's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. But when you look a little closer, it's kind of creepy and gross. And one of the things I love to play on is a very real phobia that a lot of people have, which is called trypophobia. And it's the fear of tiny holes. So if you've ever looked at a lotus pod, for instance, and it's kind of creepy, kind of gross. that is rooted in this thought that, like, when we were developing as a species, a lot of things that had tiny little growth, it either meant like it was very dirty, or, you know, it was a virus of some sort. You know, it could be like a skin infection or a poisonous plant. And so it's a deep-seated thing in a lot of us that it's still there, even though we know that nothing's, you know, in a lotus pot is going to come out and get us. But
you're attracted to that. I mean, so there's... And I love that because, you know, when I saw the work, I did want to just put my little... finger in the hole, of course, you know, this is on your website, but I was really, you know, drawn to that. So your work is very tactile.
Yes. And it, you know, it's all about those textures and what you can, and feeling it. And I've been developing this new body of work where it's kinetic cups, actually. So on the cup is a little cluster of things that you can actually move and play with. And we're so used to our drinking vessels as being this static object. Nothing on it moves.
You know,
and if it moves, you think, oh my gosh, there's a crack in it or it's broken.
Gotta throw that away.
Right. Yes. But this one, the whole point is, you know, it's it's a cup that has this, like I said, little cluster of movable things, and then you can just play with it while drinking, or, you know, it's, yeah. you know, depending on what you put out of your cup, it's kind of mm-hmm. like the adult fidget spinner. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, is this going to be on the website as well?
There's some pictures of those pieces on the website, but I do a lot of videos on my Instagram account, which is Kate Schrader Ceramics, the handle, Kate_Schrader, spelled like Schroeder, the Peanuts character, and _ ceramics, and I do a lot of videos of, like, playing with those little things, so that's the best way to... to see it online.
Terrific. Yeah, because you do have the social media, the mm-hmm. Instagram and Facebook.
Facebook it's kind of a funnel for both of my brands uh-huh. where I post things uh-huh. onto that one, you know. Mm-hmm. But Instagram is my favorite platform for social media.
Hey, excuse me. I also want to talk about the other work that you do uh-huh. Through the other website, Neat Artists. studio.com, mm-hmm. Jewelry, ceramic jewelry in that. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, the Neat brand is one I came up with right away, and I've recently diversified. So uh-huh, if people uh-huh. are familiar with my work, they might think, oh, that cup is a Neat Artist Studio cup, but I'm really trying to take it back and, like, become more of the artist and less mm-hmm. of the strictly maker. And mm-hmm. so by putting my name on it, you know, it's more
sure.
official.
Yeah.
But on Neat Artist Studio, that brand is pretty much all a line of ceramic jewelry, and it's all in Braille. And I spent about 3 years of being an art teacher at one of the schools for the blind uh-huh. of teaching art to mm-hmm. people with visual impairments and looking at this visual art form and doing it all on a tactile, working all with our fingers to feel what
yeah.
we're making.
And see, I love that because it makes sense, you know, the Braille and your very tactile pieces of
yes.
ceramic and all that. And you taught Braille, or you taught art
at School for the Blind, yeah.
School for the Blind, yeah.
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 And so with the Braille line, I keep about 60 words in stock.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't say any of them. I've got a whole collection of nice words, and
yeah.
then there's some kind
yeah.
of in-betweeners, and even a big collection of naughty words, which it's kind of your secret, you know?
Well, and that's been pretty popular for you because, you know, looking again at the website, sold out.
Right.
But, so you have nice words, in-betweeners, naughty words,
mm-hmm.
Political.
Yeah.
And so, you know... Describe a bit about the jewelry, or the piece that you're talking about mm-hmm. to our listeners.
So it's just kind of a ceramic cuboid shape,
mm-hmm.
So an elongated cube, and then it has all of the raised dots for Braille on there, and it doesn't have the translation. It's just that word.
Mm-hmm.
So if your word is happy, it will have that collection of dots on there that read happy. And the main line kind of goes with my pots, which is a white pot, and then there's gold
mm-hmm.
on there. And so there's the mm-hmm. dots are raised in a gold. But I also have that I sell at a lot of the, you know, in person,
mm-hmm.
A lot of works that are just like a solid color with all of the raised dots on there as well.
Now, just a viewer of your work, if say you're wearing your necklaces out,
mm-hmm.
is it immediate that you recognize that, oh, that's Braille,
mm-hmm.
or is it something a little bit more subtle as viewers look at your
it
jewelry
pieces?
It so
depends on the viewer.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
some people immediately know when looking at the piece,
uh-huh.
you know, they're familiar with seeing Braille. It's
uh-huh.
everywhere in our
yeah.
world and our culture,
yeah.
and that's a big reason why I do it is to, you know, it's cultural awareness of a whole other group of people, and whether you're just walking down a hall, every single door that you see, it
mm-hmm.
might have a door number on it, and right
mm-hmm.
below it, it has
right.
the Braille for it, you know, and it has it on the ATM, it has it
mm-hmm.
on the restroom sign,
the elevators.
You know, elevators.
Yes.
I mean, it's everywhere. And so some people are just very aware of those dots.
Sure.
And then some people just think that it's a neat, pun, a neat aesthetic piece that you're wearing.
Yeah.
So it can really
go
for both.
Yeah. And I love that because it really fulfills your goal, which I gathered from the website, that you say as an artist, you want to make and develop a connection with the viewer intimately and universal.
Yeah. That's always been something that even when I was making work that was so personal, it was a way to get out and have an interaction with people. And that work really came about when I was in grad school, and I went to grad school actually at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. So it was a really isolated place. And so it was really important.
How cool is that?
Yeah. It was so important to like be able to reach out and touch a mass amount of people just by looking at images. When I was in a community that was, you know, the entire state of Alaska, if you laid it on the map of the lower 48, would stretch from Atlanta to San Francisco, yet it has a population smaller than Kansas City, Missouri, without any of the suburbs and no KCK in there. So it was a really neat experience, and that's a big
reason. It was an exciting time for
you. Yeah.
You know, Kate Schrader, please, again, share with us your websites.
So the one with all of the functional ceramic ware is KateSchraderCeramics.com. And remember, Schrader is spelled Schroeder, so S-C-H-R-O-E-D-E-R. And then the one with the Braille jewelry is NeatArtistStudio.com. And both of those are all one word, and I have Instagram for both of those as well.
And I know you've got an upcoming gig with Art Westport. Let's talk about that, the dates and where people can find you.
I'm really excited about this. This is my first time at Art Westport, but I've been doing shows for about 10 years now. So, but Art Westport will be on September 8th through the 10th, and in the heart of Westport, I'm sure most of you listeners
are familiar. And it's terrific because the streets are blocked off. There's booths, there's food, there's a lot of art.
Absolutely.
It's a great place, you know, for us to go here in Kansas City.
Right.
So that's coming up next month.
Yeah, it's really sneaking up on me. I've got a ton of work to do for it.
Well, and I know it's been tough trying to commit an interview with you because you're all over the place. You have, you know, you've been in the festivals at the Nelson Atkins Museum. You've got one that's at the 19th and McGee Street Gallery. And so, you've just got a lot going on.
Yeah,
so
we appreciate that. I like to stay busy for sure.
Is there anything that we've left out that you might want to mention to our listeners?
Not really that I can think of. My only other side gig, that another reason we had a problem scheduling an interview is because of the beginning of semester. And and I am an adjunct professor of art at University of Central Missouri, and so it wasn't even something I could sneak out for because I drive all the way to Warrensburg to go there.
Because I know they have some satellite campuses, but and what is it that you teach at Warrensburg?
I teach an art appreciation and art history class, so it's a general education class. Most of my students are not artists. And when I first started teaching it, I wasn't sure that it was going to be what I wanted. I loved teaching sculpture and ceramics these studio classes, and this one was offered, and, you know, the starving artist in me is like, a job is a job. And I love this class because I'm able to convey how cool art is to a bunch of people that walk in my classroom door on that first day of semester, like, oh my God, I don't want to, why am I forced to take
this?
An art
will be
class?
An easy grade.
Yeah.
It's art.
It's the EVA. appreciation, you know, and my class is actually called It's Ideas and the Visual Arts. And so we go all the way through just talking about what is art. You know,
because most people, that's a very good question.
Right. Yeah. And then we move all the way through the semester to talking about how it's made and, you know, the breakdown of like the visual elements and principles of design and then go through art history. And this class is a funny one because we talk about prehistoric art all the way through postmodernism, you know, so we're talking about 40,000 years of art history in a very short amount of time. But I really do enjoy being able to speak about what a cool subject, you know, what art is. And
I'm sure that they bring their ideas of what art is into the classroom, and then, you know, having that discussion is going to be quite fascinating.
Yeah.
Because everyone has their own ideas about what art is.
Right.
Or well, is it art?
Right. You know? Uh-huh. One of my favorite mm-hmm. activities that I do is on the very first week, I make everybody write down what they think their definition of art is.
Ah, yeah.
And usually we do kind of like a meet and greet and mm-hmm. introduce yourself. Who are you? What is your mm-hmm. major? Because, mm-hmm. like I said, most mm-hmm. of them are not art. And what is art? And then we do the same exercise. I keep all those pieces of paper. And then, like, the last week of school, we do the same exercise. And I just love seeing how much it changes. Because most people in the beginning just say, like, art is a painting.
Yeah.
And there's so much more than
it's in the museum.
Yeah, it's just this painting or a drawing. Or people say, I don't know how to draw. Like, I can't do stick figures. You know, and it's like, well, there are some artists out there. Like, I'm not a drawer. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm a three dimensional artist. Yeah. You know, I can draw. I choose not to draw. But it's I
bet you're probably one of the most popular and beloved.
Well, I don't know about that. I've never looked at that. What is those rateyourprofessor.com?
Oh,
I try to clear of those ones, but
that's funny.
I am very excited about my subject, which always helps. I hated having classes in school where the professor just spoke very monotone and gave you the facts. And
yes.
I'm glad that I teach a subject I'm so passionate
about. That's terrific. Well, thank you so much, Kate Schrader, for coming in. NeatArtistStudio.com, KateSchraderCeramics.com are the websites. We'll have those posted on Facebook on the Art Speak radio page. Thank you so much for coming in
today.
Thank
you so much for having me.
We'll have you back soon, yes?
Oh, I would love that. Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to be right back with Art Speak Radio after this. And I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd. This is Art Speak Radio. Thank you for tuning in and making us a priority. And on that last interview, it was a little bit dated. I realize the Westport Art Fair was last week, but life happens. And, you know, her website, you heard her website, so her work is available. Take a look. Next up, we have Meryl Crabtree. She was she grew up in Memphis in New Orleans, but calls the Midwest home. She graduated from the University of Kansas with an undergraduate degree in English and French, and advanced degrees in French literature and law. Now, after writing enough legal briefs to paper an entire courthouse, she moved on to more soul-satisfying writing. She has authored a full-length collection, Fireflies and the Gathering Dark, through Kelsey Books 2017, and three chapbooks, Dancing with Elvis and Moving On and Tying the Light. She's edited four anthologies of poetry and personal essays published by Adams Media. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you.
It's so good to see you. It's been a while since you have been on.
Yes,
Art Speak, so
yes. You had me on a couple of years ago when my chapbook came out, and now I have a full-length collection.
Well, you've been really busy writing, so that's great. Good for you. Yeah. And I know you wanted to talk about some upcoming events that's happening, so do tell our audience.
Well, I have a reading from my new book that will be next Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. at the Johnson County Central Resource Library. And I'll be reading with Allery Tennille, who's another local poet. We both have new books that we'll be reading from.
Congratulations, yeah. And I love that your goal, if I could read this, her goal is to write, your goal is to write poems that, as Stanley Kunitz said, get through to the other side where we can hear the deep rhythms that connect us with the stars and the tides. So you're going to be reading from your new book, right?
Right, I will. And this book has a few of my old favorites in it, but also a lot of newer work.
Mm-hmm.
And the title comes from one poem that has that line in it about fireflies in the gathering dark. And we all chased fireflies when we were kids, and it was a really happy experience for most of us. And when I think of fireflies in the gathering dark, I think of them as little sparks of hope in the gathering darkness of whatever we're facing in life. So that's the metaphor.
I love that.
And, you know, just the title of the book, Fireflies in the Gathering Dark, it's magical.
Yes.
It really is.
Yeah. I love that magical quality to nature, for one, and to our interactions with it.
Would you like to read poetry for us?
I brought one to read today that is, because we're in the last days of summer, and
thank
I'm
goodness.
Enjoying every drop of the wonderful summer weather that we have this week. This is called Advice to Myself on a Summer Morning. Take nothing for granted. Thank every fresh-mown lawn for its irreplaceable scent, every clash of coffee cups behind the counter as you sit scribbling as if your life depended on it, a certain undercurrent of life, of duende, that pulses next to your blood before tough skin masks everything. Breathe in glistening sweet gum leaves, red-tailed hawks pumping wings as they soar, or sitting statue still, and mica-specked pebbles half-buried in mud. Look for the apertures, ancestors called them spirit holes. Dive into them, take one breath after another, yield, receive all of it, all the ordinary sights that make this life worth wandering through awake.
That's beautiful, really beautiful. And, you know, I want to ask you about your work, as you have many chapbooks and so on. Has your work really shifted? Has it changed from, you know, when you began the other works?
Oh, yes, I think so. Mm-hmm. And in part, of course, that's because I read other people's poetry.
Sure.
And that deepens my own understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, recently a friend of mine confessed, I don't understand poetry, she said. And I said, you know, with just as your previous guest, Kate Schrader, said about the importance of feeling something, for me, you don't have to understand poetry if you just relax and let yourself feel whatever you want to feel from the words, and let the words just flow through your whole body. It's a very visceral experience.
But do you think we impose that on ourselves, and that, you know, what is this, you know, what is this talking about? What am I supposed to be feeling, or what am I supposed to understand here?
Right.
Just maybe mistrust.
Yeah, we're so worried about what is the poem about? What does it mean?
Mm-hmm.
And usually for us poets, when we write, we're in that sort of twilight zone of allowing whatever comes in to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And as I have grown as a poet, one of the ways in which I've grown is to be able to trust that inner voice more, and trust that whatever is coming through is truthful.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Would you share your website with our
Yes, I'd be
please?
Happy to. It's very simple. It's MerrillCrabtree.com. And, I do have some other works on there, some other examples of my poetry. And I'd also like to say that one of the ways I've grown as a local poet is by taking advantage of a lot of the different workshops that the Writer's Place has here in town. We're very lucky that we have a wonderful nonprofit place whose entire mission is to serve the writing community. And we have a great lineup of fall workshops. Just go to their website at writersplace.org.
Well, and I know that you also have been a facilitator of some of the workshops. Do you have some coming up that you want to share?
Not this fall, but I probably will in the spring.
Yeah.
I usually like to do a workshop every now and then. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I'll mention that you'll be reading Tuesday, September 19th from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. With Larry
Allery Tenniel.
Yeah. I read that differently, but at any rate, that's going to be at the Johnson County Central Resource Library at 9875 West 87th Street in Overland Park, Kansas. So you've got that to look forward to. And will your books be available there?
They will be, yeah. And they're also available on my website or through Amazon. And I would be happy to just talk to anyone about any of the poems they like.
Well, and I should mention that Merrill is also a Pushcart Prize nominee, and her work has appeared in numerous journals and anthologies, including Calliope, the DMQ Review, New Works Review, Coal City Review, Flint Hills Review, I-70 Review, Persimmon Tree, Third Wednesday, Literary Mama, and 2014 Poets Market. But you've also served as a poetry editor for Kansas City Voices, right?
Yes, I was fortunate enough to do that for a while, and we have, it's a wonderful local poetry review that is still going on.
Terrific. Did you want to mention anything else? Or did I leave anything else?
Oh, no, if you are free to come out and enjoy. I know everybody has a very busy schedule, but I think when you take time out to listen to poetry, poetry gives back the time in a very mysterious way, but you usually end up leaving feeling better than you came.
I would agree with that. There's so many things that are pulling at us from all different directions, but listening to poetry, it's almost, it can be very meditative, very Zen-like, in a sense. And let that reader take you someplace.
Yeah, right.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much,
thank
my friend.
Maria.
And congratulations on your new book. It's really beautiful, by the way.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks. You bet. You know, we're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio after this. Man, oh man, you take a week off and you forget how to do this job, you know. Thank you so much for listening to ArtSpeak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd with you from noon to one every Wednesday on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Yeah, it's like I'm new all over again, but, I want to introduce our next guests, Eddie Guillen and Alejandro Romero with the Wet Whatsoever Community Center. And this community center supports the growth and development of families by providing a variety of programs for children, youth, and adults to build a solid foundation for life. Just want to give you a little bit of an introduction that in 1915, the Whatsoever Circle, which was a women's group of the Independence Boulevard Christian Church, they established a soup kitchen in the basement of Erickson's Cafe on Washington Park Boulevard, which is now Winter Road. And then the group soon realized the social needs of the community were just greater than hunger. Thus evolved the Whatsoever Community Circle House, but we're the Whatsoever Community Center now, and we've got Eddie Guillen, who is the youth director, and Alejandro Romero here as an assistant. Welcome, my friends.
Welcome, great to be here.
Oh, terrific. Yeah, you can come up to the microphone a little bit. Yeah, there you go. So tell our listeners about the Whatsoever Community Center. There's so much that you offer.
Yes, the Whatsoever Community Center has been there for many years, over 100 years. And this center is there for the community in general, especially for the Northeast community, because that's where it is located. It's 12th and Ewing in the Northeast side of Kansas City. And what we offer there is after-school programs for the kids, help them with tutoring, with any homework, anything that they need, so they're not at the house bored or doing things they shouldn't be doing, so they have a place to go, somewhere to be safe, somewhere to have, somewhere to grow. And we also offer boxing for our kids, our youth. I'm the head boxing coach for the community center. We offer ESL classes, GED programs, and in general, we just like to serve the community. We also have a community garden that we like to do during the springtime into the summertime. Have them come out, have the kids work on it, a preschool that we offer the community also. So it's just, it's been there for a very long time, and it's just something, a lot of resources that are there that a lot of people still don't know about, even though we've been there for so long.
Yeah, that's terrific. As I looked at the website, which is whatsoevercenter.org, there's early childhood and there's community services, youth services, just so much going on. And Alejandro, you are part of some of the classes that are offered there?
Correct. I help with the GED and ESL program that we have from Monday through Friday from 11 to 1 p.m. And as well with after school program, helping kids with their homework, helping them with their assignments, and helping them grow together.
Yeah. There's also Spanish classes, college prep, and career services available.
Yes.
Yeah. So, You know, it's at 1201 Ewing Avenue, Kansas City, Missouri. So you help a lot of people in the community, in the Northeast specifically, but you wouldn't turn anyone else away?
Nope. I've had people come from all the way from Blue Springs to all the way from Johnson County to Olathe, Overland Park. And a lot of those people, they come there because they grew up there. Yeah. You know, parents that went there, grandparents that went there, they want the kids to experience almost the same thing they experienced. So there's a lot of history there, a lot of families. Like, I have two twin boys that box for me, and their father used to box there, and their grandfather used to box there.
Wow, I love that.
So it's just that history that's there, and they want it to be there. And I'm glad that it's still around for as long as it's been, and I want it to be around for even longer.
Well, and having those different generations will help support, you know, the center. Right?
Yes, very much so. It's just there's a lot of other centers, a lot of other places, you know, a lot of kids go there, and but a lot of people still don't know about us, and they should know about us, especially because we're smack dab right there in the middle of the community. We're next to Sheffield Park, so we have a lot of resources, and we don't want those resources to go to waste.
Well, and I know that when I talked to you on the phone, you also mentioned that many times some of the groups will go out on a tour or a visit.
Yes. So. Yes, we'll go out and we try to go like the Nelson Atkins. We try to take the kids all around whatever Kansas City has to offer, a lot of arts, World War I Museum, because these kids will probably never experience this anywhere else. Mm-hmm. This will be their only chance to ever experience this and never experience that. And Kansas City is so beautiful and it has a lot of art and history that we can try and have these kids be exposed to. And there's just so much more that even I don't know about. But hopefully, you know, people tell us, hey, let's go visit you. Yes, I would love to take my kids out there, have them experience Kansas City, you know, let them have good memories of whatsoever.
Now, with the programs, is there a cost for, say, the classes? Or
No. There's no cost whatsoever for boxing, no cost for our after-school program. It's all donations. It's all it is.
Well, and I know that talking to you in the green room, you had mentioned some upcoming events that you want to share.
Yes. During Halloween, we will have a haunted house at whatsoever. So that is for the whole community to come through. We'll be passing out candy. There'll be a haunted house. We'll try to make it as scary as we can. You know, it's not going to be like the West Bottoms haunted houses, but we'll try our best. And then,
you know, I know the Northeast is really popular when it comes to Halloween celebrations and the homes that participate, decorating their yards and whatnot. So.
Yeah. Last year we had a lot of families come through, and we want the same outcome, if not more. You know, just have them come down, because we have a gym, a full-size basketball gym, and then we use that whole basement as a haunted house. So, you know, it's pretty fun. It's very fun for the kids, and the kids will participate. They'll dress up. So it's a very good experience. We have our board members. They come, and they also dress up, and they participate. So, you know, it's a fun experience for the whole community to come through.
And the telephone number for Whatsoever Community Center is 816-231-0227. Not everyone has access to the internet. Whatsoevercenter.org is the website. And Alejandro, how long have you been with Whatsoever Community? I mean, did you grow up and sort of participate in some of the classes and...
As a kid, I used to go to the Whatsoever for the after-school program. I began a little bit, but it was kind of hard for my parents to take me. So I was only able to attend for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a fairly close-knit community where everyone sort of knows one another and really looks out for each other and nurtures each other, right?
Yes, we try to get families involved, get the parents involved, because at the end of the day, you know, we wouldn't be there without the kids and without the parents bringing the kids. So we like to bring them all and be involved, because it's very important to have family be part of it, so they can see with their kids how they're progressing and stuff like that.
Yeah, I love that. The mission, part of the mission statement, is that you strive to foster a sense of community in a place and a place for personal and family growth. So terrific. Whatsoever Community Center, Eddie Guillen, Alejandro Romero, thank you so much for coming in and talking with me today. We hope to have you back. And actually, oh my goodness, my phone. And actually, we're going to have your kids over here, hopefully, before the end of the year.
Yes,
right?
That would be great. I would love that, but I would love to be back. I would appreciate it.
You bet. You got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio right after this. And this is Maria Vasquez Boyd with ArtSpeak Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in today on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Next up, we have the National Museum of Toys and Miniatures. We have the director, Petra Kralichkova. Kralichkova. There you go.
Petra Kralichkova.
Ah, thank you. Thank you so much. Neil Corkin and Tina Cranen. Yes? Hope I did that right. So we're going to talk about the National Museum of Toys and Miniatures in partnership with the International Guild of Miniature Artisans. They're proud to present Miniature Masterworks, which is an unprecedented juried showcase of fine-scale miniature work. The show, first for the Toy and Miniature Museum, will be held September 15th through the 17th, and 68 of the top fine-scale artists from around the world have been selected to participate in the show and submitted work for the Barbara Marshall Award for Artistic Achievement. Let's talk about that. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having us. We have been preparing for this event for a while, and really in cooperation with, as you mentioned, IGMA, the International Guild of Miniature Enthusiasts,
artisans,
have been really essential in working with the National Museum of Toys and Miniatures in organizing this event. And we're just thrilled to have all the artists here and honoring really Barbara Marshall in this way through the award. And so they will be here this weekend. Visitors will be able to speak to artists, look at the artwork in the galleries, and be able to really get a full scope of what it means to create a miniature.
That's terrific. And I want to mention that Petra is the new director of the Toy and Miniature Museum here in Kansas City. So this is very exciting because I want to say that Barbara Marshall, if you did not know, she is the founder of the Toy Miniatures Miniature Collection. And so it really does honor her and the miniature artists. And we're going to talk to Nell Corkin. And Nell, welcome.
Thank you.
Yes. So let's talk about the work that you do that you have in the miniature museum.
I do something that's a little bit unusual, even in the world of miniatures. Uh-huh. I make 144th scale dollhouses.
Wow.
Now, to give you an idea of the size, you could hold one in your hand, and the scale is a dollhouse for a dollhouse.
Wow. Wow.
So they're very, very small. A sofa, for example, in the scale would be half an inch long.
You can think about that scale in your mind, but to see the actual piece is just astonishing. And I know Tina and I had talked about how many times guests will just sort of, glance at the miniature pieces and not realize what it takes to create that, right?
Well, besides the skill you must have to make miniature pieces, the tools we have are not ordinary tools.
Yeah.
Mostly we invent our own tools just by having a piece of scrap of a piece of metal just fits in the tiny little hole to just put there the tiny little thing you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to a fair or a museum, a miniature museum, you have to realize that everything is made by hand, and it is not done by a machine or some mold. It is just all made by hand.
It's literally, yes, handmade. I want to mention that the National Museum of Toy and Miniature is located at 5235 Oak Street here in Kansas City, Missouri, and the Miniature Masterworks will be up September 16th through the 17th, and the show and sale are included with the museum admission, and you can find more information about that at toyandminiaturemuseum.org. And the International Guild of Miniature Artisans, how many people are are a part of the Miniature Artisans Guild? Do you have an idea?
Yeah, roughly. We have roughly 1,000 members.
Uh-huh.
Some are what we call general members, who are just people who collect or just plain love miniature art. And a sizable proportion of them are what we call fellows or artisans. And to have that status of membership, you have to submit pieces for judging.
Mm-hmm.
To see if you're worthy, basically. It is our goal as an organization to promote fine miniatures as an art form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I noticed what your potter earlier was talking about. There are lots of kinds of art. It's not just painting.
Right, right.
And definitely we see fine miniatures as an art form. I'm sure the museum does as well.
You know, the many times that I've been to the National Museum of Toys and Miniature, I'm always knocked out by that scale and the detail, the precision, you know, the craftsmanship that it takes to create these miniatures. Yeah.
It is. And really, interestingly, we are one of the largest museum that has fine scale miniatures on view. And so it is really something to look forward to. And it is a museum for both adults and children.
It really is.
Mm-hmm. Where we organize community workshops, but also we organize lectures. And so it is really something to look up to. Now, the 68 artists that are coming this weekend, that you can engage with them on such a personal level is something very special.
Absolutely. So there are several dates that I have in front of me. One is September 15th through the 17th is going to be the IGMA Miniature Masterworks, which is a three-day event at the National Museum of Toys and Miniatures. And then the Artist and Patron Benefit Party, which is September 15th from 5 to 6. And for more information, I believe, and you can get tickets, I believe, at the number 812-330-8823, right? I also have a Miniature Masterworks preview in sale, again, September 15th, 6 to 9 p.m. And you can find information about ticket prices at miniaturemasterworks.eventbrite.com. And, there's a lot going on.
Really, this Friday is kind of the opening gala for both the artists and the collectors in the community that kind of kicks off on Friday with a special event that you just mentioned. But the Saturday and Sunday also is when you would be able to view both the exhibition in the museum as well as the showcase with the artists. And throughout the weekend, we're going to have 11 artists present lectures at the galleries, and so that's pretty much ongoing most of the 2 days from about 11 o'clock till 3 for 20 to 30 minutes with each artist.
Wow.
You could walk around through the gallery. They will point out their artwork, how they made it, what they were influenced by, and what scale they're working in, and what material and what it takes to be an artist that makes fine art scale miniatures.
That's terrific. You know, it's very seldom do you have the opportunity to talk to an artist, much less an artist that makes such miniature work, which is really fascinating. And for the artist talks, do folks need to make reservations in advance or need to purchase a ticket?
No, really. The event, like I said, is part of the museum admission.
Okay.
And so whenever you would be interested in coming, and I think on our website we have a list of these talks, and so you can certainly pick an artist to come in and listen to speak. But if you come throughout the weekend, they will be ongoing as well, and if there would be a pause, then you can see and speak with the artist directly.
And I'm very happy that we have two of the artists here, and they actually brought some work with them, and I saw some work by Nell on the postcard, which is the beautiful cabinet. Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
So this is also featured on the website, some of the pieces, so that people have a
Yeah, absolutely they are. And, you know, with miniature artists, it's really something that they pride themselves that many of the artworks that they make are functioning the same way as the ones at the full scale. And I know we have here a couple of artists that might speak of how they create some of the art.
Well, we're just about out of time. I just have a couple of more minutes. I do want to mention the exclusive handbook, miniature books, pop-up books, and stamp books made by Tina.
Yes.
And they're really quite lovely. So more information can be found at toyandminiaturemuseum.org/masterworks. You'll get all the dates, the times, everything you need to know right there at the website. I want to thank you all so much for coming, and I really appreciate it. We're going to have you back.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And I want to say thank you to Kate Schrader, Eddie Guillen, Meryl Crabtree, Alejandro Romero, Neil Corkin, Tina Krainen, Petra Kralichkova, right? I got to practice some more on that, but I want to remind you that Jeff Harshbarger is next. Stay tuned for Jazz Afternoon. Next week, September 20th, we've got lots more people to share their stories with, creativity and all that. So I hope you tune in next week. I want to say thank you all so much for making us a priority. Honey, I'm coming home.